What's up, fam? It's your boy Biggie Smores back at you with another episode of the Biggie Smores Show. As always, hit me up with your comments, critiques, criticism, advice, suggestions for next episode, anything. Hit me up on my social media. It's at Biggie Smores, at BIGGIE underscore SMORES. And I also have an email account you guys can email me at. It's BiggieSmores@gmail.com. The email actually doesn't have an underscore in it. Bad planning on my part. But the thing is, I already had this Gmail account. I just never used it, so I figured I could use it for the pod. So I know it's been quite a while. The main reason for that, I actually had a whole episode recorded and I was about to put it out, but my wife actually surprised me with a professional mic as an early birthday present for me. So with the holidays and stuff, things have been kind of crazy, so I've been trying to squeeze in recordings and that, along with the fact that right now my setup is just a Chromebook. And it is a kind of cheaper Chromebook, so I can't just download Android apps on it. It has to be the Chromebook apps. So I can't really find one. I've been trying to find one that'll silence out the background noise because this mic picks up so much more. So if you have any suggestions for me, let me know, guys. And the other reason why it's why it's taken so long is because my our main topic today is actually something that I did a ton of research on. Our main topic today is actually on the legendary Nike Air Force One. Now, I'm going to get into history of it and everything with you. I think you guys are really going to love this. So bear with me. I'm really trying to work on the audio and stuff. Like I said, I want a good professional sounding podcast, and I want it to be the best it can be for you guys. I don't want you guys to just have to listen to bad quality audio or anything like that. So this episode is probably going to be a little bit different than most. So just bear with me. And we'll get into a little bit of sports talk here, and then we're going to dive right into our main section on the Air Force Ones, as Nelly would say. So let's get into some sports, guys. Guys, as I'm recording this, getting things wrapped up, it is Thanksgiving night. And my Chicago Bears, the Bears are leading the NFC North by a game and a half. Could be stretched to two, depending on how that Minnesota Green Bay game goes on Sunday. So I'm feeling really, really good right now, man. The Bears have looked good. The Minnesota game is a little bit iffy. I'm surprised at the way that they played with Chase Daniels today. It's been a real, real good thing for me, man. Obviously Mitch didn't play today, like I just said, Chase Daniels did. But Mitch has been looking pretty damn good. He's only been throwing a couple of those, kind of overthrowing his receivers. He's getting better, man. Our defense has just been ridiculous. Eddie Jackson, man, had two pick sixes in 5 days because the Bears played Sunday night and then they played Thursday. He also has 5 interception returns, and this is only well, 11 games in to his second season. So, I mean, dude's a beast. That Bears defense is sick. I'm real, real excited about the season. I'm real optimistic about this year. Things just keep looking up and up for the Bears, man. Minnesota's not looking the best right now, but maybe they can turn some things around. I'm just going to go out and say it right now, man, Green Bay's done. If Green Bay loses this game Sunday, no way they're making the playoffs. They are done. I'm putting it on wax. Shout out to Jalen and Jacoby. Man, I can't tell you how good this feels, because if you asked me before this season, I would have sat here and told you I think the Bears were going to go 8-8. That's how I felt before the season. We're 11 weeks in. The Bears are 8-3 right now, man. Like, I mean, yes, I know there's a possibility that the Bears will still go 8-8, but I really don't think they're going to lose out, man. I really don't see those Bears losing out. My Pistons have been mediocre, leaning a little bad, but surprisingly, we got all this shit going on in the NBA. You know, you got, I shouldn't say surprisingly, you know, there's always crazy shit in the NBA nowadays. You got Jimmy Butler getting shipped to Philly, which I don't know, man. We all know how I feel about Joel, so I don't know how Jimmy and Joel are going to do together. I know Ben Simmons probably ain't going to take any shit from Jimmy. So we really got to see how that goes. I know Ryan Russillo says that he thinks it's a great move and stuff, but I'm still questioning it. I don't have the experience Russillo has, so I don't necessarily know. But then you got, you know, Houston, the whole Carmelo situation. Melo's gone. Melo played a handful of games for him. You know, not that much of a surprise, but it is still kind of surprising. We'll see where he's going to land, what's going to happen there. You got the Lakers that are kind of, I mean, they got LeBron. They're going to make the playoffs. And then we got Golden State falling apart now. Falling apart, I put in quotations. Because honestly, this really isn't that big of a deal. Like, this whole Draymond KD situation really isn't that big of a deal. They're going to get it figured out. They're the Warriors. Steph's out. Like, once Steph comes back, things are going to get on track. And they're going to, like I said, they're going to get it together. Although, it is worth noting, though, that things like this are what end up ruining dynasties. Things like this are what end up blowing up dynasties. So we'll see how that goes. Honestly, like I said, I think Golden State's just going to get everything back on track. They're going to run through the West again. Chances are they're winning another championship. I don't see anybody really being able to stop them. I mean, even if Boston really gets their shit together, which I don't know if they will, man. They got too much going on in Boston right now with everybody wanting more minutes and stuff because the way last year went without having Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. So, man, I don't know, but I mean, it's still early in the season. NBA doesn't really kick off until after Christmas anyway. But anyway, we're actually going to get into our main topic today, which, like I said before, is all about the Nike Air Force One. So, guys, the Nike Air Force One. We all know a little bit about it here and there. I mean, everybody knows it came out in 82. everybody knows that it's one of the most popular shoes ever. I'm going to try and get into the stuff you guys don't know. Actually, some of the stuff I actually learned myself, which I thought was really, really cool. There is actually a lot more history, and there's actually a lot of people say that the Air Jordan was kind of the shoe that saved Nike, but kind of in reality, it started back with the Air Force Ones. Nike always had this perception of being a kind of white, how do I put this without sounding racist? It always had this perception of being a white guy brand, I guess you'd say. Kind of more tennis, golf club type shit. So with the Air Force One, that all kind of changed. Like, it was picked up by the streets and adopted by the hustlers and adopted by the B-boys and the real street ballers and all that. So in a way, this shoe was something that did kind of save Nike, and which I'll get into this in a little bit, but it also helped shape the future of Nike, really. So as some of you may or may not know, the Air Force One was designed by Bruce Kilgore, who is a legendary designer. Designed multiple shoes, Nike Sock Runner, Air Jordan 2, just numerous other shoes. Bruce actually got a start out as a designer for home appliances. And then he got into the automotive industry. He was actually on the design team for the Pontiac Fiero, which, for those who don't know what a Fiero was, it was made from like 83 to 87, I believe, or 84 to 87. It was a mid-engine, front-wheel drive, two-seat, I guess you'd call it a roadster. They're pretty badass little cars, if you ask me. For whatever reason, I've had like a love affair with them for a long time. So I think that was a really cool fact, and I actually did not know that. Anyway, kind of getting off on a tangent there. He also worked on the Chrysler K car, which we all know is the car that set things into motion and kind of saved Chrysler, because the minivan was part of the K car platform, and it's a whole different thing. Like I said, I don't really want to get off on that tangent. And one of the really interesting things that I like about Bruce's story is he actually accepted his job with Nike over a dinner at Pizza Hut. So this guy that changed Nike's future actually just happened to have a dinner at this. Oh, I shouldn't say just happened to have a dinner. I mean, it was a meeting with Nike people, but the fact that Nike would do this at a Pizza Hut, and that's where he accepted this job, I think is a really cool fact. Also, as I'm sure you picked up on, the name for the shoe was obviously inspired by the president's plane, the Air Force One. Another thing that most people already know is it was the first basketball shoe to have Nike Air in it. To have an Air unit in it. Now, Nike had already put out, I can't recall the name of the shoe, so I apologize for that. But Nike had already came out with a runner that had an Air unit in it. And they had been working on a basketball shoe. It was about two or three years in the making before Bruce had got on board with Nike. The rumor has it that the shoe looked a little bit like something the Michelin Man would wear. So I think we should all be grateful for Bruce for getting on that. Kilgore was actually, he was inspired by a hiking boot, where it slants from front to back in like the shaft of the shoe, which is like obviously like where your leg's sticking out of it. And because it provided stability, stability and support for your ankle while still providing you mobility, and that was especially needed for the smaller guys that were wearing this shoe. It was also the first basketball shoe that featured a cup sole, which a cup sole is ultra durable. It doesn't break down as fast as like what those vulcanized soles and that Blazers and obviously Chuck Taylors and all the, pretty much every other basketball shoe before these had. So that was one of the reasons why it gained so much popularity with like the street ball players and that is because it took a beating on the asphalt. So when Bruce Kilgore got the shoe in development and he got prototypes and stuff, what he did was he actually went to local colleges and Oregon, and gave out the prototypes to players to wear and test. And one of those players was actually young Tinker Hatfield. And now, if you've been around the sneaker gang long enough, you'll know that Tinker Hatfield was the legendary Jordan designer, the guy that kept MJ with Nike, the guy that put out 28 or what, however many Air Jordan shoes. He was the legend, or he is a legend, and he actually got inspired to get into footwear design because of testing out those Air Force Ones. He was so impressed by it, it kind of enamored him, I think that's the right word, to break down, you know, like what makes the performance of a shoe and stuff. The prototypes for the Air Force One actually had a steel shank in it for, you know, to help connect your forefoot and your forefoot and your heel. And it also helps with torsion. And Tinker actually kept that in his mind, and he put that steel plate that was in the prototypes of the Air Force One was actually his inspiration for putting the carbon fiber shank into the Jordan 11, which is widely considered the best performing basketball shoe there's ever been. So it's crazy how things come full circle like that. How, you know, if it wasn't for Bruce Kilgore getting on this Air Force One design team and getting all that done, we may have never had that Air Jordan line. We may have never had that greatness. Now, the midsole was actually inspired by the cathedral at Notre Dame, and they made it a high midsole, but your foot does kind of sink into it a little bit, and that was to help with the stability, because otherwise guys would have been kind of rolling their ankles and whatnot. And also they designed that circular, outsole to create a pivot point. And it was meant more for like the bigger guys when they were posting up, they'd have They'd be able to place their foot down and swing themselves around if they were going to face up, or be able to back down a little bit, plant their foot to be able to do a hook shot or whatever it needed to be. Now, this was something that I actually didn't know, but the 1982 release, the original release of the Air Force Ones, was only the high top version. There wasn't a low top version until the next year in 1983. I thought that was incredibly interesting, considering the marketing design that they used with the Air Force One. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I want to say a lot of those guys were wearing low tops in it. So they those low tops went mostly for some of the NBA guys, and then they actually brought them out in 83. And speaking of that marketing campaign, it's that legendary one where you have the six NBA guys in their white tracksuits standing on the tarmac at an airport with the plane in the background and all that. And those six NBA players were Moses Malone, Michael Cooper, Jamal Wilkes, Bobby Jones, Calvin Natt, and Michael Thompson, who's Klay Thompson, the Golden State Warriors' father. The other campaign ad, which was actually pretty sick, was a printout of like a Nike box, and there was kind of like a glow coming out, and it said Air is now sold by the box or something to that effect. That is a great marketing scheme. It's no wonder why, you know, these caught on with so many people. Now, the Air Force One gained extreme popularity over on the northern East Coast. Hugely popular in those cities like New York, Philly, the DMV area, like Baltimore, that. Extremely popular. There was actually three Baltimore shops that came to Nike and suggested doing this Color of the Month Club, which is exactly what it sounds like. They put out a different colorway once a month, every month. And so these shops, or these guys from Philly and New York and all along I-95 are hearing about this. So they're heading up. They're heading down to Baltimore and scooping up like every pair of these places got. Now, a part of that Nike deal, these shops had to agree to bring in 1,200 pairs a month. So that's a large amount of shoes to be pushing like that. And they sold out pretty much every month, man. Pretty much every month. And in 1984, Nike actually discontinued the Air Force One. They figure, you know, this is the end of its run. At that point, a sneaker had basically a 2-year window. It'd be put out, and it was yanked off the shelves, and the shoe never came back. This was way before retros. This was one of those things where you didn't, you know, that's why in the sneaker culture, you tried to cop what you could cop because you weren't going to be able to get your hands on it again. So it was really important, and that's where retroing kind of changed the game and all that. And so these cats on the East Coast, they're like fiending for more forces and stuff, but Nike ain't putting them out. So then they start doing things like customizing their kicks, And they, those customs were always kind of inspired by the, a lot of those customs, I should say, are kind of inspired by the Color of the Month Club, things like that. And they started putting a lot of heat on these retailers. They're going to these retailers and being like, look, man, I want to get more forces. What can you do for me? Well, then these retailers start feeding back to Nike, letting them know all this. And eventually Nike caved and Nike started putting out Air Force Ones again in 1986. Now, Nike was only bringing those back to a few select retailers all along. It was mostly along the East Coast. And so it really made the Air Force One that very first retro shoe. So that's another roundabout thinking about how important the Air Force One is. And then they continue to put them out and continue to put them out and stuff. Well, in the early 90s was when they finally replaced that the mesh side panels and toe cap there with the regular leather and all that that we know now. And if I'm not mistaken, it wasn't until around 91, 92, until the absolute most iconic Air Force One came out, the white on whites. And now that actually isn't a known fact because nobody actually knows when the first white on whites came out. A gentleman by the name of Gary Warrant dug into it, looking at old hip-hop album inserts and hip-hop magazines and stuff, and figured out that the white on whites with the gum bottoms would have released in 91. White on white high tops, they were a limited release in 92, only on the East Coast though. But regardless of that, the Air Force One white on whites was instantly adopted as a classic. And I mean, we all know the history with that. You got guys like Jay-Z making it famous so for only wearing them once and then burning them and getting a new pair. And at this point, the Air Force One had kind of grown enough in popular, had really grown in popularity, and it was kind of starting to move its way out of those traditional East Coast areas, spreading itself across the country and stuff. And that, like I just mentioned, that was really helped by dudes like Jay-Z, always rocking them. You always see Jay in them. Dame Dash was always rocking them. Like I said, a lot of those New York guys. The Diplomats, man, Jimmy Jones, Cameron, Jewels, all those cats, they were always rocking Air Force Ones. So it kind of put it on a stage, and it was 2002. Air Force One drops, the song Air Force One drops, and it kind of blew up. Then everybody wants Air Force Ones, and so they were starting to spread across the country at this point. But by Nelly releasing that song, Nelly being a St. Louis guy, releasing that song really showed the iconic status of what the Air Force One was, what the Air Force One is. And it really showed at that point how it was moving all the way across. I mean, we're jumping ahead in the timeline here, but you see it. The Air Force One can even kind of jump across cultures because you're seeing Jax Teller in Sons of Anarchy always wearing white on white Air Force Ones. So it's iconic, especially in the hip hop culture, but it's just an iconic shoe all around. And one of the things that's actually funny is the fact that Nike didn't like the idea of having these rappers kind of pushing the shoe, you know, kind of being spokesmen for them. But that all kind of turned around by like the mid-90s. And you're seeing the 40-40 clubs come out. You're seeing the Fat Joe's got his own Terror Squad joints. You know, you're seeing countless kind of collabs with rappers and labels and just a ton of special edition Air Force Ones in general. That, like I said, Nike kind of turned around to it. Now, what's funny is, for those of you who don't know, Nelly actually ended up having a deal with Reebok around like 2005, 2006, somewhere in that area. And he put out a couple shoes with them. Well, when he did the song Air Force Ones, he went to Nike trying to be compensated in some way. And he wanted his own shoe. And Nike didn't really oblige, but they did do quite a few custom things with them and stuff. You know, there was the Air Dirties, which were the CB94s with that red, white, and blue patent leather, which are absolute fire. There was actually quite a few custom, or I shouldn't say custom, but special, the Dirty Edition sneakers for Nelly in that. Air Force 2s are another big popular one. But Nelly didn't feel he was compensated enough in any way. So he ended up signing that deal with Reebok, and he had a couple shoes with Reebok. That first one was like an Air Force One knockoff pretty much. The second one, I'm not sure what they ever did with it, but I swear to God, if I can ever find a pair of either of them, like dead stock, I'll probably just scoop them just to say I have them, because I feel like it's kind of like a historic thing. That's just my eyes on, you guys can feel how you want to feel about that. But anyway, getting back to Air Force Ones, like I was saying, by the mid-2000s, they were doing so many special editions, and they were doing so many collabs with, you know, everybody. And they even started, you know, they were putting out stuff with graffiti artists like Futura and Stash. And then they did the infamous Mr. Cartoon Air Force Ones in a bunch of different ways. They had those laser edition ones. They had the Entourage joints that they made specifically for the shoe. And then there's a few pair out there that you can even get your hands on. I mean, Nike was even collaborating, you know, doing like the ultra limited PlayStation Air Force Ones for the launch of the PlayStation 3, which actually retroed last year, the year before, or something like that. And then in 2007 was a really big year because it was 25th anniversary of the Air Force One. They actually commissioned a song. It's called Classic. It's got Kanye, Nas, Rakim, and KRS-One on it. It's actually a pretty dope track. They did the TV spot, which had 10 NBA players kind of in a similarly iconic in an iconic ad that was similar to the original 1982 one, where they're all in white jumpsuits on tarmac, you know. Let's see if I can recall it from my head. I know there was Kobe, Chris Paul, Rasheed Wallace, Nate Robinson, Sean Marion, LeBron James. I think Dirk was on there, but I'm not positive. Amari Stoudemire, Steve Nash, Tony Parker. I want to say those were the 10 guys, but I'm not positive about Dirk. And then they all ended up, or no, it wasn't Dirk. It was Vince Carter. I can't believe I forgot that. It was Vince Carter. was my ESPN. But they kind of redid that spot, and then they actually had a really dope commercial of that them guys playing a game of basketball with a track that was by Joel Santana and Just Blaze. Air Force 2007 was a crazy year for the Air Force Ones. They had Nike's first sneaker that was priced over $1,000, which was the Masterpiece of Lux, which was an insane shoe. It was the Air Force One with white on white, all Anaconda, actual Anaconda. They were handmade Italian, or handmade in Italy, I should say. And then they had a brown on brown gator, gator skin one. And like I said, that was the first, Air Force One that was, or I should say, it was the first Nike shoe that was price pointed at over $1,000. I want to say retail was $1,200. And I mean, they were insane. I'm sure like dudes like Clark Kent or like Mayer have a pair, but I'm sure they didn't sell a ton of them. But 2007, in a lot of people's eyes, was kind of the end of the Air Force One. Because then that year, like, you started to be able to buy them at just, you started being able to order them online off Eastbay and Foot Locker and Champs and Finish Line and all those places where you couldn't before. And then they just started putting out so many colorways. There's so many colorways that release every year. It's insane. And I don't mean to be one of those guys, but the quality on them has just gone downhill so much since 2007. The leather that they use isn't anywhere near as nice. You know, it's sad to see kind of what's happened, but at the same time though, like, there's some really dope colorways. Like, I still love Forces. To me, the Air Force One is the most iconic shoe there is. There is no shoe, as much as you want to debate like a Chuck Taylor or even the Air Jordan 1, like, there's no shoe in my opinion that is more important to the history of both hip hop and basketball and just the sneaker culture in general than what the Air Force One is. Like I said, there's been just countless releases since 07, and the market's just kind of become oversaturated. That in a lot of people's eyes, man, they're played out. They still sell steadily off the shelves. And I mean, like, especially like those white on whites and like the all blacks, and that are easily probably the best selling models. And the Air Force One's popularity on that East Coast is still just immense. It's right up there. And to me, nothing will ever have the place in my heart quite like the Air Force One does. It's so special to me and my evolution as a sneakerhead, because when I first really got into it, it was like my third or fourth pair of shoes that I had bought. I bought off one of my really good friends who has now passed away, a pair of white, red, and black Air Force Ones. And actually, it was, I think, 2 years ago now, maybe three, that I actually was finally able to find a pair of these and buy them again. And I have them in my closet. I wear them on special occasions just because of what that shoe means, you know, what that shoe kind of represents to me. That specific shoe, you know, reminds me of my boy Tone. So it's a really important shoe to me. And it's also so special to me that I had my own pair made for my wedding. It had our wedding colors, navy, white, and gold. And on the heels where the Nike Air logo would be, my left shoes had 715, which is our anniversary, and my right shoe said I do. It's just, for me personally, having everything wrapped up in that, you know, having that history with a great friend, having our anniversary, having our wedding and all that with the Air Force One, without a doubt, it remains the greatest basketball shoe of all time in my eyes. And now I just want to let you guys know, I got most of the information for this off of a excellent article that's written by Mark Richardson for Grailed.com. It's called A Cultural Force, A History of the Air Force One. It is an excellent article. You can go give it a read. Like I said, it's on Grailed.com. It was published almost a year ago. It was December 5th. The other thing is, a lot of the stuff I can't really cite, if you want to know the truth, because it's stuff that I've just learned throughout the years. There was a really good movie called Just for Kicks that chronicles the sneaker game, basically from the mid-70s all the way up until that movie's release, which I believe is like 2006. That's where I got a lot of the information for this. And then also Nike had put out, for the 25th anniversary of the Air Force One, Nike had put out a ton of content around it, interviews and things like that to chronicle the history and everything. And you can still find those videos on YouTube. That's where I got some of this information. And then the other thing is, very few people are going to know what this is, but I have to send a huge shout out to my boys at uptowns.net. RIP, it's no longer around anymore. It was a sneaker forum, similar to Nike Talk, but different. They had big beef running with each other for a long time. But those cats at uptowns.net taught me a ton about shoes, man. An absolute ton. And I wish that place was still around. I wish I knew people like that knew what uptowns.net was. But anyway, like I said, man, this just, it was just a chronicle of everything involved with the Air Force One. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. So stay tuned. Well, fam, that's it for today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm kind of trying to start getting into some different stuff here. Let me know what you thought about, like, me doing the history of a shoe, trying to get into detail about it and all that. As always, hit me up on my social medias at Biggie Smores, at BIGGIE underscore SMORES. Hit me up on Gmail, Biggie Smores, no underscore there, just BIGGIE SMORES. Give me feedback. Let me know how you're feeling, man. You know, I'm trying to get better at this. with the holidays around the corner, I'm really hoping that I'm going to be able to hopefully have a little bit of time to do all this, but I'm really hoping that we're going to be able to put out some good content. You know, that's the biggest thing, is I want my content to be good. I want you guys to like what you're listening to. Otherwise, obviously, you ain't going to listen. So please, like I said, give me feedback. I don't care if you tell me that you thought it was terrible, but just give me feedback. Let me know, okay? I want, like I said, I just want to send a special shout out to everybody that reached out to me after the last podcast, where I kind of had that opened up to everybody about some stuff. I really, really, truly appreciate it. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. I mean, nothing's really wrong with, you know, not that mental health is right or wrong or any of that. I'm doing good, though. But it means the world to me to know that I got people out there that are gonna, you know, that would immediately reach out to me because they were concerned. That, like I said, it means the world to me. Once again, this has been the Biggie Smores Show. I hope you guys keep listening. I hope you guys keep tuning in. Give me that feedback. Once, I'm going to say it one more time. Hit me up on my social media at Biggie Smores, at BIGGIE_SMORES. And that is on my Snapchat, on my Instagram, and my Twitter. And then you can email me at BiggieSmores@gmail.com. Now, the email doesn't have an underscore, so it's BIGGIE SMORES. You guys have a great week. I hope your Thanksgiving was wonderful. I love y'all. Peace and much love to you.